Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in Madison and Cave, not the other way around, and Mike off camera from the band Grey Market. Welcome, everybody.
Pleased to be here. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I'm gracious to have you guys here. I know we've been trying to get you in for a minute. We had a little bit of elevator debacle that kept it from happening, but here we are. So normally I like to do the ceremonious thing of pressing rewind around here to say, where does it all start? Take me back to where it all starts. But with you guys, it was seems like I couldn't really pinpoint where that spot is. So if you guys could press rewind and take me back to the spot as you see it, where Grey Market starts to become a thing.
Did you say like 20 years prior?
Okay, so here's the thing.
I'll go back as long as you want.
How far back are we going?
You can tell the end and then the middle.
There's two eras. I'll do the first one. I think Madison should do the second one.
Okay, cool.
So the first one is like years and years ago. Like I met Mike through school, and we sort of like ended up as a two-piece, and we spent all this time trying to like figure out something to have like a third member, and it just wasn't happening. And so it's just sort of we sort of stumbled our way into being a two-piece with like doing electronic stuff, because I was doing electronic stuff at USF at the school at the time called SciComm that was under Paul Reller, who's a teacher, an electronic music teacher that was there for, he's still there, I think. And so I was trying to like pull all those things together.
Nice.
Like the rock and roll and the electronic stuff, and we just rolled with it. But that was forever ago. And then we took a break and we came back. And like we did it for years and years. We put out a bunch of records. We took a break. And then when we came back, Mike was like, let's sort of come back with a bang and change it up. And so we tried out sort of adding different players. And I remember Mike was going crazy. He's like, I was talking to like a gospel choir. And like, you know, I'm like, hey, man, it's cool. That's, I think, where the sort of interesting part of the band that we have now really starts, and that's with Madison. So, you should talk about that because, you know.
I got a fun email from the viola professor at USF once upon a time when I still went there for music. It was a foreword of an email that Cave, I think, you're the one who had emailed her.
No, it was Mike.
My bad. Mike emailed her and asked for a violin player, and she forwarded it to me, and then I didn't look at my email for a month, and then she started texting me, telling me to look at my email, and they've been stuck with me ever since.
Aw. So kind of talk to me a little bit about the first round. How are you juggling trying to bring all this together as a two-piece?
Okay. So when I met Mike, he was a band that was jamming with, I think, four people, maybe even sometimes five people. And one of the guitarists at the time moved to New York, and then like I joined as a bassist, ironically enough.
Well, there's always room for a bassist.
Yeah, right. It's like you can never have too many bassists.
Yeah, right.
And, that was
or there
my
seems
thing.
To never be one.
Right. We did that for a while, but it was more about trying to find a way to combine. Like I loved electronic music. It just sort of it turned into a thing. And I remember I called somebody at the time. I remember being on the phone with a student named Sean Kyle from at the time, and I was just like explaining this idea. I was like, what if we just skipped all this? Because like I was learning to play guitar and I was trying to learn how to sing, and I was just like, what if we just skipped this and just had like a two-piece with like a laptop? And this was a long time ago. And I remember he was just like, it's not very rock and roll or something like that. And I'm just like, you know, at the time I'm like, he probably wasn't wrong, but I was just, if I get an idea, you know, then I'm going for it. And we just sort of made it work. We forced it to work. And it was really tough because we'd go out as a two-piece and, you know, we would always be very dependent. We still are on, like, the sound man, the PA, because, you know, most places expect you to show up and they're just like, okay, so where are your amps going to be? Where's your bassist going to stand? You know, and they expect sort of something conventional. You throw it up, they go, and we're just sort of like, no. Like, you don't understand. This is weird. But like, it's been really years and years and years of trying to make something that not only works for us and expresses the thing, but it's also like you show up and people can understand it. Really, I would say 75% of our live show is trying to create something that technically works for the sound man and for the people that are running sound who because they don't know our songs, they don't know our music. So like that's a unique challenge,
right?
I think for us. You know, honestly, adding in Madison has been, it's been great because it's forced me to look back at all the everything that we've ever done or committed to, or I've had to rethink it in the sense of I look over everything again now. And now I know the songs better. I know everything we're doing better. I've had to integrate a new performer, and it's been good for the songs. It's been good for me being familiar with the songs. It's been good for me. I think that sometimes there's a temptation when you have a technical setup to just be like, well, I did it once and I made it work and now it's good. Now it's good to go.
Right.
And now it's more like I am constantly in a position where I'm like, I'm ready to fix everything on the spot. If anything goes wrong, I'm like, which happened actually. Something went wrong at the last. We did a thing on TV.
Oh yeah,
like a week ago. And I remember, and it's like, it's nice because both. I remember I was supposed to do an interview before we played a set on TV,
mm-hmm.
and it was Mike and I were going to do the interview. And something went wrong, but I'm sort of like, okay, I go into a mode of like Mr. Fix It. But Madison and Mike are just like, it was just like they just rolled with it. Mike gets up from behind the drum set. Madison gets, and like they just roll with it and they do it. And like, I don't know. I know I'm sort of rambling and losing the sort of the question, but it's all very organic. It's more organic than you'd think for a band that's so tech, sort of, I guess, such a nerd band. You know what I mean? Like a computer, it's like a computer project.
Did you see it as that when you were coming from this 4 or 5 piece band that you had? Because that wasn't Gray Market. You separated off from that, the two of you, to be Gray Market.
I think that for a while there was a third guy that from when we originally met that we played with, Christian, who we played with for a while, and that was something where it didn't work out, and I I ended up kind of replacing him on guitar and then replacing myself with the electronics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's tough because, to be honest, I actually don't like I don't really like terminating relationships with people in a band situation. I don't really enjoy that at all. It's like I'm not Mike and I have always been people who sort of have like. We don't. It's not that we're not the same person necessarily. We don't. We've managed to annoy each other and whatever. But like 99% of the time, we really are sort of easy people in terms of how we get along really well. Like we can drive in a car for 9 hours and not rip each other's heads off. You know, like
that's rare.
I can fart with impunity. It's quite a thing. I'm sorry. Sorry for you to hear this, but
it's okay. But, I've met you guys.
There are rules,
right?
You can break them though.
Once after he left and after we tried for so long, really, it was to the point where we would sit in Ybor City. Or go to the mall, and we would just be like, "You look like you might be a musician." And we would literally go up to people and just be like, "Hey, man, are you a singer?" Or, "Hey, man, do you play like this? Or do you play that?" And we tried to get people. We would be on, there were all kinds of websites at the time to try and find, musician seeks musician.
Right.
We would come out, we had people. But the problem is, either they weren't the right style of musician. If they were good, they didn't play the right style, or maybe they weren't into what we did. If they weren't good, or sometimes they would just be bad, or
but really willing,
right, which is also really tough,
right?
It's that's hard, and then sometimes you'd have people where it's just like the vibe isn't right, and like I learned from somebody, a friend of mine who really liked hockey. I learned about the term. Mike and I both love hockey. Actually, we talk about it. But he said he was the one that introduced me to the term of being good in the locker room.
Mm.
So it's like you might have a player who's really maybe they're really good on the ice or okay or whatever, but maybe they're locker room poison, right?
Yeah.
So they show up and like they just get under everybody's skin and like they don't know. And so it's like you got to. I think the young Madison would say you got a vibe.
Yeah.
I think, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that was it. We couldn't find anybody. And so it was just sort of like, well, I'm tired of waiting around. And it was just sort of like, I was already trying to through this thing I was doing for school, I was starting to do more of the electronic music stuff. I was just sort of like, why not two thing be one thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because it's hard to split. You know what I mean? I have trouble with like context switching, if you're familiar with that expression, right? When you're, let's say you're working on one kind of thing, and then it's like you have to switch and work on another kind of thing, and there's a context switching penalty there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, okay, today I'm fixing my car, but I also want to like write a song. It's like, well, now I can't just go from A to B. I'm in car fixing mode, and now I have to go, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so it's like, why not just put them together, you know? And it was a hard sell for a long time, but to be honest, I've always been like really happy with what we've done. Like,
well, there's a lot to be said for that.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, I don't want to speak for Mike, but I think that like we both kind of look back on the stuff, you know, the music we made, and we're like, I like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's it's like, and that's what I cared about even early on, was like, I want to make stuff where I can be proud of it, and I feel like if we find an audience and the audience enjoys it, it'll be because we made something that was done with absolute like if somebody makes something that they don't like and expects somebody else to like it, that's disingenuous.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I've talked way too long.
Well, I was just going to say that's when your music almost starts to become a commercial, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting that you can say that, you know, as long as we can like it, it gives somebody else the chance to reasonably like it. Because I feel like that sort of is like a foreign thought process to some degree now, or it becomes counterintuitive. But I've yet to find someone that can tell me how they know if someone's going to like it or not. You know, it's chasing something elusive. You know, I think you just have to like it first. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, when you first started writing and you first started looking for other people, you already had material written that you were writing just in the computer, or?
So two things happened at once.
Thank you for sticking with us. We hope you're enjoying the episode. We'd like to take this time to talk to our sponsor for this week, Tony Barrett from Barrett Realty.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate you having us on the show. Barrett Realty has been in business for 20 years, and we are a boutique real estate company. And I look forward to servicing our community with people that want to buy and sell property. I think it's very important that we're out there advocating for personal property rights. And we want to be the people that you select when it comes to buying and selling homes. So please, if you're interested in buying or selling homes in Manatee, Sarasota, or surrounding counties, reach out to us at Barrett Realty at 941-745-9999 or brmovesyou.com.
Again, we'd like to send a big thanks out to Tony Barrett, Barrett Realty, for sponsoring this episode and being an awesome part of this community. Please enjoy the rest.
So when I met Mike, I was just on bass, and I remember going to a friend's house. I can hear my mom right now giving me a hard time for saying like so much. It was a friend of their band's, and we would hang out in this little sort of detached sort of shed that they'd built, and that's where we were going, you know, to jam and all that. So there was a lot of just like jamming and playing ideas.
Just the two of you?
No, this was back when it was the four or five of us.
Okay.
Then we would do it at Mike's dad's house. And so there were some things where it was like ideas, right? And so it was like some riffs, you know, or some. I think that a lot of the earliest stuff that we did was sort of, I think, was born out of just sort of riffs or ideas. And it was the first time that I felt like I had, at the same time, I was doing the Psychem stuff with Reller. She knows Paul Reller too, because she took a class from him, that was all the stuff was happening kind of concurrently.
Mm.
And the first time that I felt like I'd written a song was, we had parts that we jammed out for a song called Mayday that's on our earliest record. And I just remember being like, okay, there are all these parts, but it's sort of like it's not really put together as a song. And I remember coming home and sitting down and just sitting there for like hours and being like, what is missing? Where does it go? The longest part of that was trying to figure out where to go with the bridge and the ending of the song. And,
well, it's always sort of, the bridge.
The bridge is a killer.
it's like, do we have to write?
But
a bridge?
You know, don't get it wrong. I mean, like Mike also had great ideas because Mike had this great idea to play a halftime change up in the end of the bridge, and like that stayed and it's still in the song and it's a key part of the song, at the same time, you know, we did that, and then the Psycom stuff was happening, and I remember that I wrote a song called Sirens. This one I wrote, Sirens, was it's a song off the same album, pretty much, which was for a project for Psycom. I wrote that song for the Psycom rehearsal that they would do at the end of every semester. They'd have everybody come out and play their thing.
Cool.
And so it was like, you know, everybody would sit there in the auditorium and we'd listen to everybody's compositions. But that, it was sort of, if you listen to the Dauntless record that we did, both those songs are on there. They sort of represent, I think, that's sort of the primordial, like, ooze from which all of this stuff crawled out.
And at that point, are you having that feeling like I'm making something I'm happy with? Or did it take a minute to be able to look back on that and realize that this is from the jump and something that's been fulfilling in that way?
It was always like, okay, does it make me excited? Do you know what I mean? Do I feel something when I'm making it? Do I feel like I'm doing something that is it really has to there's a feeling that is elicited that is sort of a gut feeling when you make or you play the thing or you think about the idea of playing the thing for people and you're just like, am I allowed to swear on this?
Yes.
Okay. Because I was going to be like, this is going to be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and, you know, it's got to be something where I get into it. Like, I remember when we were working on the second album, which was insane, because I just, like, I had a room in my, there's a middle room in my house, my condo. Don't get it wrong. It's not a house. It's a condo.
I share a wall.
Yeah, and, like, I apologize to my upstairs neighbor, Suzanne. I remember that I was trying to soundproof it, and I dragged, like, the mattress off my bed and put it up against a wall and the box, like, anything I could to, like, soundproof it, because I hadn't figured that out yet.
Yeah.
I remember that I was working on the Waterworks, and I was just like, this, which is a song off of our second album, and I was so into it, and I was rocking out so hard that I accidentally, like, was, like, air guitaring or something, and I smashed the globe on the fan above me. I just, like, was like, yeah, and I just punched and smashed the globe on the fan, and it was just, like, glass everywhere, and so I'm just like, well, that's how it should feel when you, like, make something. You should just be like, hell yeah. Like,
I was going to say, that's, like, the sign of a winner.
Right. Like, I mean, again, maybe somebody else would be like, you also have to get sort of used to the idea that you're going to play something like that. And somebody else might be like, oh, yeah. You know, but it's just, you have to ignore that. You have to just be like, okay, I'm not making, it's not like Nickelback where everything is sort of, is music by committee, you know, it literally in the sense where, like, that's a dude where when they write a song, it's sort of, they run it through, like, everybody that they know. They run it through, like, 25, 30 people and say, what are your favorite parts? It's not like that. It's just like, here's the song you've made, and does it, how do you feel about it?
Right. So how long do you do that? How long do you guys toil that and make records, just the two of you, before you have the split or before you take a break? How does the timeline, because that's what kind of confused me, I didn't know where the start was because it was like two chunks.
Oh, this is a fun question. So
four records.
We're going to say there are four records. We had an EP before that didn't really count, where we were just trying things out. But the first one we did and put out, and then we sort of did a redo of it.
And at this point, you're not doing any other band thing. It's just...
Yeah. 2007, that was the first one, and we had one in 2007, one in 2008. We redid the first one in 2010, then we did one in 2012, and then we did one in 2016, and then we took a break for a while. And we were still playing shows, but it wasn't, you know, we were sort of spinning our wheels, not really getting anywhere. And then we sort of, when we came back, COVID happened, yeah, which was wild. And then when we came back and met Madison and our friend Mark, That was in 2023. Was it? Was it the beginning of 2023?
Wait.
I think it was 2022.
Yeah, I feel like it was like the end of 2022.
It was February. Yeah, because February 2022, I think, was it. It's not really that, but recent. Yeah.
So were you writing through that whole time with like Gray Market being like a on a hiatus thing, or were you guys just definitely off and it just started to congeal back together? That's kind of what I'm curious, how the timeline hits the dip and how you come back and get Madison into the fold.
So I was still working on, there's a set of songs that have kind of, as we've been working on albums that are, so most of the albums that we've done, all the albums we've done have been about sort of encapsulated single individual songs, right? So it'll be, you know, the song is just one thing, but I had this kind of space opera thing that I wanted to put together for a while.
Love the sound of that.
Yeah. But that was something that started growing. I'd say the first tracks of it date back to the first record we ever did. And so over the course of that entire time, including during COVID, it was still like a growing thing that was turning into this real monster. So there were still songs I was working on or developing during that time, but I didn't really know how, when, if we were going to end up managing to sort of make that sort of a completed, you know, thing and finish it up. But I would say that we came, by the time, including that sort of dip, by the time we came back, we were largely playing older songs, but the sort of the space opera stuff was pretty well complete and ready to go in terms of the songwriting, at least, even if the arrangements aren't or the mixing or the, you know, the recording isn't done. It was the songs themselves were ready to go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you're starting to pick up shows and you got in the band at that point?
I think that was your first show back, right?
Right, because it was originally just a one-off. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be a one-off.
Yeah, it was like their first show ever back after the great COVID hiatus. And I think the plan was just to have a violinist on, was it one song or two? Two songs for just the one show.
Yeah, and that, and because that's kind of what I wanted to ask. When you're writing all this stuff, how do you approach the instrumentation? Do you think to yourself, I know I can play this off of Backtracks Live? Or is it that Mike might call a choir or we might find a violinist, so I'll just put all this in there and maybe it'll be a real thing?
You know, I don't really think about it at all because, you know, I think that, you know, if you look at a lot of people think that the gold standard of a song, whether a song is good, is, what happens if you play it on acoustic guitar? And if you can you play it on acoustic guitar and sing it? Is it, and that's what makes it a good song, or play it on piano and it's a good song? And I think if it's a good song, you can go in the other direction and it'll work just fine to go back. You know what I mean? You can always find an arrangement to make a good song sound like a good song. And so it was something where I never really thought about it too much. Do you know what I mean? I thought less about it. It was more like I had access to all of these tools, which is how we ended up with all these like overblown arrangements. It's because I was just like, it didn't sound done yet, or it didn't sound right yet to me. And so I just kept going, and that became the style. That became the, you know, it wasn't ever like, well, it needs more of this. It was just sort of like, well, this part doesn't sound done to me in terms of the arrangement. And so, you know, I didn't anticipate, there are two songs that from our early records that had violin on them, live violin. Those were the only two we'd recorded at the time that had anybody else, any other live musician playing on them. And
so there was some groundwork for violin.
A little bit. Yeah, and there was a lot of synth violin parts as well. Yeah. And like a ton of Gray Market songs. Like most Gray Market songs, I think, had digital violin in them.
So like some kind of pad you could cover.
Yeah. At least somewhere to start.
Very cool.
You know, what's funny though is like when Madison joined the band though, it's like a lot of that went out the window because it would be like, okay, you know, there'd be these string parts, but I realized that so many of the string parts were more like beds, right? Like in the sense of, or so it would be like, okay, there's strings playing, but it's more like, okay, you've got sort of a legato, like arrangement, or where you have the equivalent of string section playing. But, you know, Madison wasn't somebody, she wasn't somebody that we integrated as like she's not a section, she's a soloist, basically. She's our first chair violinist in a way, right?
I love it.
So it's like, you know, really every song that she's ended up playing has been like, okay, well, if we just have like if Madison just plays like some version of most of, anyway, the parts where it's just like, you know, the strings that are the digital, she calls them the baby strings, the ones that are already on the recording, then it's gonna suck, because it's like, you know, you don't want a live, you know, violinist to be up there just being like, so like, but it's
you mean you don't want to play whole notes all night long?
Oh, it sounds like a blast. I don't know.
I mean, but that's how it started, you know, like that's how it started. It's been such a massive education because you know, working on these things with Madison and like trying to like come up with like parts, right? Real like good, like, and you know, you can tell when they're good and when they, you know, when they suck, you know. It's like, but they end up being a different thing than even what was there to begin with. But that's actually a lot of fun, right? Because it's like you find the space, and you're not just trying to fill space, but you find the space, and like you find the way to sort of, I don't know, you treat it like a unique and it's a different instrument, and it's really changed the songs, and it's helped make, you know, all this new stuff we're doing, which she basically came in. She's going to be on all the space opera stuff. She came in at just the time when we're like, we're getting into a record, we're moving through a record. We put out two of the songs on like a, like with some vinyl and like EP, because in tight.
I wanted to ask you about that, and I don't mean to mission drift, but you opened the door too much. That was the last single you put out called Control, right?
Contact.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about that song. This is part of the space opera?
Yeah.
Okay. Set a little bit of the groundwork then for me, that, because really what I wanted to ask is where you start to transition from, I thought I was only here from one gig, to now I'm starting to add to the party.
What have I done?
And we're learning. Yeah. You got to be in what have I done? Where am I? And we're starting to collectively learn from each other. But that piece of music really struck me as, even if it hadn't been any kind of time in between the other stuff that's out there, it still struck me as a listener as a big gap in, like, it seemed bloomed quite a bit more. So if you could talk to me a little bit about that song, maybe how it fits in the context of the project, and maybe how you're fitting in now with the writing and bringing so much more to the party.
I think the violin part for that song was one of my favorite processes that we've underwent in terms of a violin part. It was an absolute blast to write, because obviously there was already stuff in there,
mm-hmm.
and it became this fun little group project where like all of us got to bring in little idea, what if we did this, what if we added that, what if it went down here, and honestly it has been so much fun. I love the contact violin part.
Is that like one of the first things you guys have done like real collectively like that?
There was like, we wrote violin parts for like Phlebas and a ton of old stuff before.
Yeah, so when we, because like when we started out, you know, we were trying to figure out, okay, we had an, like when we played our first set, right, and we had these
our first show back.
When you were still in limbo territory.
I
don't know if there was a limbo.
We just didn't know what we were doing. We showed up. And then we were just like, oh man, this is awesome. And so like we asked Madison, you know, if she'd stick around, and like, that was sort of, at the time it was like, well, we needed a set to play for playing shows. So most of what we were doing was like going back to the older songs that we would play as a set,
right,
and trying to figure out like parts to, for Madison to play over the old songs,
and not relegated a whole note hell.
Yeah, no, I mean, if we can avoid it, you know, sometimes it's hard, because it's just like, oh man, like,
sometimes, you know, it's so fitting.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's right, sometimes, but it's, you know, one of the like golden rules of writing for like, if you're writing like orchestral music, is, and I think as John Williams has said it, is like, you should try and make every part interesting for the player, you know what I mean? Even if you have all different, you know, all these oboe players. It's like nobody should be bored. Like, write good parts for every instrument and you can get it, whatever. But like, I'm not comparing myself to John Williams. I'm trying. I wish.
Embody the ethos.
Yeah, right. I wish I could. But like, with when we transitioned to the new stuff, it was more like we had some experience with figuring out, like, okay, we know what's going to bore the hell out of Madison, you know, you know, and in the new stuff, so we'd done some of the old stuff, but with the newer stuff, it's always been like, okay, you start somewhere, and then we've had time to sort of, because there's so many songs, we've had time to like iterate and develop, and it's sort of like when we were doing the Contact stuff, because it was really just like a two-sided Contact and Fine Mess, and even those are both learning experiences. I think that on balance, I think Contact has probably got the more developed violin part than a Fine Mess. But you know, no regrets, as the kids say. But like, I don't know. You sort of learn the lessons of like make it interesting, make it fun, like make it cool, and like that's great, because it's like you sit there and you spot it out, right, and you say, okay, like, we could do this here. We could do this here. We could do this here. And then you try stuff and you try stuff. And what's nice working with Madison is Madison's like Mike, where it's sort of like you can just be like, what if we did this? And they're just sort of like, let's try doing that. And then you record it. And if it doesn't work, you know, or try it. If it doesn't work and you're just like, let's shit can that and try something else, then it's not like, it's just like, okay, let's try something different, you know, and or they bring their own ideas or they're just like, well, that's not going to, you know, that's not going to work, or a human being can't play that.
That's happened a few times.
Yeah, I mean, Mike is, I do it the worst to Mike, I think. I'll be like, what do you mean you can't play like six drums at once?
Yeah.
He'll just be like banging his head on like the tom.
That is the curse of drum programming when you show up to the drummer. Dude, I don't have a third arm. Whoops.
but I like this new stuff is it's great because it really is a great opportunity to sort of come up with, to work on stuff and integrate, and like I am a person who likes to work even if Mike's not, you know, necessarily writing the violin part. It's like I like to have everybody in the room. Do you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
Like, because it feeds the vibe, it makes the thing work, it feels good. It feels good to feel like you're doing everything as a band. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's been greater, you know, than the sum of your parts day today here. So I guess you inadvertently played into that one. Did you feel that right away when you were able to get Madison into the band? Did you start to feel like you guys are being greater than the sum of your parts now? You know what I mean by that? Like, you're not just all your individual parts being played at the same time. You're all now playing parts together, and it's all better because of that.
I think so, because a lot of the violin parts that we currently have, I feel like, didn't reach their final form until we all sat with them. Like, sometimes I'd bring in ideas, Cabe would bring in ideas, but I feel like they never became their ultimate evolution, you could say, until all of us sat down and contributed to them, if that makes any sense.
So is that the way you're approaching bringing all of the stuff for this space opera to life, collectively?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I listen to... you know, Mike was like talking about a song that's later, like that we haven't gotten to yet. And he the other day he sent me a message and he's just like, I think this song needs a horn section. And I'm just like, fuck yeah, it needs a horn section.
Which one?
I think it was the Embers. It's one of the later songs. It's somewhere in the middle, I think. We haven't gotten to it yet, but
okay,
it's there.
That's fun. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, let's do it. I mean, I'll try anything, man. I will try anything. Like, I just don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I care about the final product, but like, it's really liberating to know that there are no constraints upon the instrumentation, or, you know, the only people that I need to please are either in the room or they're people who already like what we're doing. And you know what I mean? And like, it's like, what I you know, I don't have to meet any bars. I don't have to, nobody can gatekeep me out of anything. You know, I don't give a fuck.
have you always felt that way, or is that something that going through the lull and all those things has now kind of brought into full fruition?
What do you mean about not
that you don't have to give a fuck?
No. Look, I mean, even again, there've always been, so like, even when we would go out and tour, as I said, like, I, you know, people people were telling me it was a bad idea to even try this arrangement when we first started. And
that
then trying
it's a great idea.
Trying to go out and tour it has been hit or miss. Like sometimes, and it's been really interesting because sometimes, and you would never know, right? Sometimes you'd roll into a place and you'd be like, you'd be in like Kansas City or something. This is a random city I'm picking. It's not a specific gig or like Louisville or something, let's say. And like
we got love
in.
For Louisville.
Oh yeah, no man. We love Kansas City. We lived there for a while, and like we love Louisville.
Yep, Louisville.
And like but you roll in, and it's like it doesn't matter where the city is. It's like you just never know what you're gonna get on stage, right? Because sometimes you roll in at some, and somebody who's just like almost angry about what you're trying to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And sometimes you roll in and it'll be like a 75-year-old dude who's like, I've been running sound since I was blah, blah, blah. And like you roll up and you put on stage and then they're just like, bam, they just get it. And like you feel it on stage and it sounds great. And they're just like, yeah, you know, it's because they're good at their job and they don't have like an ego. They're not, you know what I mean? They're not like a way about it. And then sometimes you roll in and maybe you'll have like somebody who's like 23, you know, and they'll be like, yeah, man, like I got you. I get it. And they'll just shit the bed, you know. And the thing is, when you are so PA dependent, I mean, we don't even have an amp on stage anymore. Like,
that's what I was just going to ask, how you handle the logistics live. And I know that some of that's gotten better with time, thankfully. Do you guys do all in-ears? You running off in-ears and clicks?
Yeah, we run off in-ears and clicks. We got a whole like live project that's been through several different DAWs and evolutions, and I mean, it's pretty involved right now in terms of, you know, the amount of like programming going on, but
always live drums.
Yeah, always live drums. Yeah. That's always been a thing, and you know, I have like over the years I've tried many things, man. Like I had like a pedal board with pedals on it that people now would probably like murder me if they found out what I'd sold, right? Like I had like a Whammy One, you know, like the original Whammy. I think I bought it broken on eBay for $200 and fixed the switch. And when I sold it, it sold for like $800. And now they're worth even more than that.
Because yeah,
I know it. Like the original algorithm and all that, blah, blah, blah. And like I had like a 30th anniversary Marshall half stack, and I had a Fender Twin from like the 70s. I had the Cornford RK100 half stack, which is the heaviest fucking thing, the heaviest object, the heaviest pair of objects that humanity has ever created.
Yes.
Yeah, and thankfully,
and somehow they had to be carried up a flight of stairs.
Oh my god! Yeah, there's a bar in Atlanta. There's a really popular venue called Smith's Old Bar, which is a great place, but for years. They have an upstairs room. And for years, the only way to get your gear in is you had to carry it up this like wrought iron staircase up like two floors to get into this back door. And so it's like Mike and I with this like 80 or 90 pound object, which is like, you know, it's like 13 ply Baltic birch.
Yes.
And you're trying to carry this stupid thing up. But like, I got to the point where I was just like, I liked the consistency of not having an amp, like whether it's a digital modeler. I had a Fractal for a while that when those first came out, I had the first generation Fractal and I loved that. But it got to the point where I'm just like, look, man, these days all of my guitar sounds come from like a $25 plugin. You know what I mean? And I don't have a pedal board. It's hard as the internet tries. Like, I'm not going to buy at like, I'm not, I don't follow pedal stuff. I don't follow gear stuff. I love guitars. I'm just like, just go away, man. Just like, get that out of my life. It's just, it's to me, it's in the way of everything. I'm in my own silly backwards way, I'm like a purist. I'm just like, me plug guitar into thingy and it go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost simpler in a way.
Right.
But.
Well, and that's the evolution kind of the timeline that your band straddles too. You know what I mean? Back in the day, it was like, if you didn't drag an amp around, what were you going to do? And in-ears were so much harder to, the logistics of it was such a pain in the gas.
Oh yeah. I mean, we were real, honestly, I'm not arrogant enough to say we were ahead of our time. That's but like, I will say that we tried to do things before it was like a lot easier to do them.
Right.
It worked out for us because there's only two of us. So, Mike didn't have to have in-ears because he was sitting right next to the computer. He could just plug it into the interface that we had. And so we only had to buy one wireless in-ear monitor system. But like, we got into that, and like before we had in ears, Mike would count every song in, just like he'd give me the 1, 2, 3, 4 with the sticks, and we would just play with like no in ears and just do it and just try and stick together and hold the time. And you know, Mike would be on the click, and I would just try and like follow along and deal with the wedges and stuff.
Right.
You know, so like, I can't tell you how many iterations of the technical setup we've been through, but now it's like, it's pretty sorted and it's pretty straightforward. And like, to be honest, like, I've made it just about as easy as I possibly can. You know what I mean? So
yes.
At this point, if something goes wrong, I'm just sort of like, you know, and you get used to that too. Like you can't expect everybody to just, when you roll in, you can't expect everybody to just like know, you know, how you're supposed to sound based on. But I will say that over time, something that has happened is the ratio of people who get it and do a really good job to people who just drop the ball.
Mm-hmm.
It has just swung in our favor a lot, because I think that more and more bands are like, honestly, I've seen more. So now I see more like we play shows with their bands. So I see their stage plots, and I've looked at their stage plots, and you'll see more and more of like, yeah, we don't have amps. It's like, you know, we have three guitarists and they all run their modelers, and the modelers all run, you know, direct out to the board. And I'm just like, that's good for us. It's good for us because it means that now when we show up to play a gig, it's like just people anticipate that a little more.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And like, again, I'm really not trying to shit on anybody. It's just like, it's tough. It's tough when everybody's like, when you run into people who are used to like, okay, like, you know, they're used to stage volume. They're used to like, they want, you know, this half stack's going to go here. You know, this half stack's going to go here. The bassist is going to put his like 8x10 Ampeg, you know, with SVT head here. And the drum is going to, and I'm like, that's what they're used to working with.
Exactly.
They almost don't even have to mic anything up in some of these smaller venues, you know?
Right.
And so when I'm just sort of like, okay, we're going to send you these six lines that come out of a DI and they're all set, and like, then you just run drums and, you know, it's like sometimes it's like you're speaking another language, you know what I mean? But like, that's not their problem to solve. That's my problem to solve. Do you
right.
know what I mean?
Yes.
Like I have to find a way to make it so when we roll in to play shows, it has to be something that they can understand. It's on me, not them. Because if we sound bad and we leave, that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's where not having amps and stage volume to rely on is the gift and curse.
Yeah.
That is the really scary thing about playing violin, though, is I'm very much at the mercy of everything being executed correctly because I do not produce enough sound.
Right. That's got to be a strange feeling.
It's a little spooky.
Do you ever have it where you hit that first note? Is something going to come out?
Yeah, every time. That and sometimes I have no idea what it sounds like in the house, the entire set. I'm like, oh, I hope this is making sounds. I really hope there's noise happening.
Yeah, I suppose that's the gift and the curse of ears, of wearing ears.
Well, I mean, like, the thing, you know, with a violin, it's like, you know, you have the two options, right? You can have an acoustic violin with a pickup, like a wood violin with a pickup, or you can have an electric violin, which, you know, I can already see Madison, like, I can feel Madison's emanating her feelings about electric violins right now.
They make some really cool ones, though.
Yeah, but
they, I have some, you know, very strong feelings.
You don't want the flying V one?
They like, all sound like tinny to me. I have yet to encounter an electric violin that doesn't have like this weird bumblebee tinny gross effect to it. And I feel like it's so much less effort in terms of producing a good sound to have a decent instrument and just put a pickup on it.
Plus, they make fretted ones, which has got to be straight Cheaterville.
That's like disrespectful.
Yeah. Have you ever seen them?
I've never seen a
Trans-Siberian
one.
Orchestra girl, I believe she's endorsed by the most famous company that makes them.
Okay.
I can't think of what the brand is, but they make like flying V1s and like, you know, stuff that looks like it should be on stage with Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
I don't think that yields a better sound. I just think it looks cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a stage gimmicky thing. It's a stage thing.
Does it sound good?
It works. The reason people use them is because they work better with effects, because you don't have to worry about feedback because they're not hollow and chambered. So they're not going to sound good, you know, by themselves.
Yep.
But you can. But, you know, that's the problem is it's like a trade-off. But at the same time, it's like if you have an acoustic violin and, you know, Madison's always like, can you, like, run me through distortion pedal? I'm just like, that will not go well because it'll feedback.
I was going to say, you can.
Like, yeah, it's like, we can, but it'll sound like wee for the entire time. But like, you know, so she's got, I think she's got like a Barkus Berry sort of, you know, piezo pickup underneath the bridge, and that runs out. But she can't run into an amp, right?
Right.
And because not only would it be too quiet, but if it were loud enough, it would feed right. So she's got to go into a DI, which is fine. But again, most sound men don't see a lot of violinists coming through unless they run like bluegrass, right?
Then right.
At which point they're used to fiddle players.
And then you only need a couple mics on the stage and you're good to go.
Yeah,
because nobody's plugged in. Pickup to that. Yeah. No one's bringing a DI to the fiddle gig.
Yeah. No. No, the worst thing you got to do is tell your banjo player to settle it down over there. I got a thing with bluegrass, sorry.
I don't have a washboard, so.
No, it's something I always tell people. I love all kinds of music because long story short, I've been in the music industry for a long time, but the one music I can't handle is bluegrass because it's so frenetic. It's just something about it when I'm listening to that mandolin and banjo strumming high throttle. It's like, but I can listen to metal music. I don't know. So maybe I just need to be subjected to more banjos.
I think the problem is that I think you need bluegrass that has more breakdowns.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, some halftime
like,
bluegrass.
Yeah, they're like, you know, they're plucking away the banjo, and then they just got a spot where they're just like... Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, you might have just unlocked a whole new genre right there. Doomgrass. I think there's a market for that.
I think we can do that.
Oh, great. Now we see this is the problem. This is the problem. I say like good in the space and they vibe. Madison is the worst because if ever we're just like, haha, this is an awful thing, or that'd be stupid, or we really shouldn't do that, or boy, that'd be miserable. Madison's like, we should do it. We should try that.
That's exactly what we need to do.
I'm sorry that you don't understand my dedication to the bit.
So then I guess now we kind of got a little bit idea of what it's like on stage. What is it like when you're writing? And I guess I know you've answered some of this, but what I really want to know is, and I like to ask a lot of bands about this, and I kind of understand where you sit because you've written this body of work. You've got this album, this space opera, let's say, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel any type of way about how it is you present it to the world? Like you're forced to make these singles and lead up to it and play the We Have to Stay Fresh game, or you want to sit and gestate on this whole body of work and drop this space opera?
Yes, I have lots of feelings about it. My short version is it's a real pain in the ass. Not because I don't want to do it, but because it's tough to sort of make it compatible with the idea of having an album of songs that's like 21 or 22 songs long. And Mike is the one who's been Mike is like, he's, in addition to what he, you know, so he's got his role in the band and, you know, as my friend and as like a, but then he wears the hat of like almost being like band manager, you know, kind of like he understands the practicalities and he's just sort of like.
Someone's gotta.
Yeah, no. But like, you know, and I know that nobody wants to do any like that stuff. You know what I mean? Like the fun stuff is like the making and the playing, you know, like that's the fun part of music. Like, but I mean, it is a reality. And so like, he kind of got me to come around with this idea of like, okay, well, we'll do this vinyl and it'll be these two songs, which are absolutely like random places from within the record. You know, one of them is, I think, the ninth track and one of them is like the penultimate track on the record.
Dang.
So they're really far apart in terms of the, like the story's chronology. But like, now he's, you know, I'm trying to work up art to do another single release. And to me, I'm like, oh, man. But I'm like, what happens if you put out a single and then like, you know, later you want to put out the whole record? I'm like, but then you've already how do you like integrate all of that on, you know, so you've got the single out. But now it's like do you just have two copies of the thing on every digital streaming service? Because now you put the album out and I can reconcile myself with the idea of like, you know, a two song single. Because
right.
Bands do that all the time with an, you know, like A side. And usually if you have a B side, it's not on the record.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? I'm just like, but it's just too much. And I'm just like, it's like part of me, and of course, if you want to do a good job, it's like every one of these singles needs like good artwork that's cohesive with the whole project, and it needs time to run these things through. And so it's difficult because part of me also just wants to be like,
let's just do this for the record.
Let's just finish the damn record. You know what I mean? And like, but and like, and sort of iron, you know, like clamp down on that. But I also know that, I mean, it's been inculcated into me by Mike, who is right. he's right. That it's like, it just doesn't fucking work like that anymore. And so you can't, you know, you can, you have to. You know the industry is not going to change for you, and so it's like you have to keep making, you have to keep producing, and like you have to keep making content, which is, to be honest, that's also been a difficult thing to wrap our heads around, because
that sort of changed in your lull of time too.
Yeah, right. Like we were sort of, you know, there was a time when like bands could almost be sort of, not even mysterious, but it was just sort of like everybody was just sort of like, you put out a record, you go play a tour, you know, you have your merch, and like maybe you'd give some like updates on like, hey, how's it, you know, on your website, on your old website, on your MySpace, or you know, on your GeoCities, what, I don't know, whatever.
But I like, send smoke signals.
Yeah, right. But now, it really is just like, okay, you know, you have to create content. But to be honest, I've been really careful with that. I think we've tried to be really careful with that too. Because it's one thing to create content and be like, hey, we played shows. Here's like some pictures of us playing a live show, or like here's some ideas of like, here's some stuff that you know, some insight into us, like what we're doing and our process, and like us, you know, to show people we're making to make content in the interest of showing people that we're enjoying what we do, or like we're moving along with what we're making, or we're doing the thing, we're enjoying it. But it's tough because I think there's a fine line, because even locally, it's like sometimes, you know, people struggle with figuring out how much content is too much content.
Right.
And where is the quality too? Because sometimes it'll just be like, hey, like, here's some bullshit that I did today. And it's just sort of like, man, like, you can oversaturate your own stream, your own sort of feed and your own stream of things. And it's just like, you know, I think people realizing that more, because I feel like the content thing, that it feel like it's been dialed back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if you don't have shit to say or offer to the world, then just shut up. You know what I mean? Like, shut up and work on your thing, because that's what people really want to hear. But for a while there, man, it was so bad, because it really was just like, you know, nobody knew what to do. And so they were just doing everything. And it'd be like, feed the algorithm, be like, hey, here's what I found on my belly button today. You know, and it's just like,
yeah.
Hey,
and that,
cool,
and that's always why I want to ask, because I feel like it falls into one of two camps, or in sometimes in your case, it's seemingly both, where I don't want to give away half the movie before I put the movie out. And I don't want to feel like my part-time job as a musician is content creator, because that's taking away from the thing I wanted to do.
Right. Like it always sucks too when, like, you know, you go to make a video or do the thing and it for everybody, and you're like, hey guys, and you're just like, oh no, like, you know what I mean, like, no, I'm it now I'm the thing
now, I'm,
you
know, hey guys,
hey guys,
oh
no,
damn,
but
it.
Yeah, no, it's like you don't want to give it away, but it, like, the thing is, I think people need to, like, you want to make people understand it. It's like, I desperately want people to hear the thing, like the finished product.
Right.
Like,
you can't commit relevancy suicide.
The goal of making, of doing this thing is not like for me, is just like, I just want to like make the damn record, and I want people to hear it, because I like, for me, it's just like, make song, me like song, me want to make people that I like hear song and enjoy. But it has to be like,
somewhere,
you know,
got very complex.
Yeah, it's like, here's a 10-second, you know, blah, blah, blah for my thing. Here's, and it's just sort of like, Jesus Christ, like, I didn't sign up for this shit, man. Like, I just want to, like, it's like, I just want to make my belligerent, my over-the-top 22-songs, you know, two-hour-long space opera.
Yeah, is that so much
is that
to
too
ask?
Much to ask?
No.
Come on.
Well, Mike, if you want to jump in, I would like to get...
Do you want to swap?
Can we swap?
Yeah, I was gonna say I'd like to hear from you a little bit because I know you. I can feel the contributions.
Yeah. He's telepathically telling us what to say.
Yeah, I like that. So,
what's up, man?
Howdy.
Hey, you guys know each other?
No.
Oh well, this is Cave.
Right. We're not related.
No.
Before you ask.
No, I didn't think so. I definitely didn't
think
so.
I don't think anyone thought so.
No. That's a lie. You know that's a lie.
We're actually going to title this episode Not Related.
Love that.
Just so everybody knows right out of the gate.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Mike, you are the one that I've been talking to. It's been great to meet you in person and see you here. I'm glad we got you on camera a little bit.
Thank you.
If there's anything, I don't even want to try to cycle back. Anything that you want to add, I would love to hear anything to add to the story to this point.
He hit most of the parts, as you could see. Like, he went on in great detail.
Yeah.
And he hit a lot of it. I mean, it is true. We would stand outside, like, the old Orpheum and be like, hey, man, are you a musician? Like, I'm serious. Like, we would just go up to people. And that's sort of an example of the things that you have to, like, force yourself to learn how to do. You know what I mean? Like, when you get into this, it's like, yeah, you know, there are plenty of bands who kind of want to just, like, hide in the background or, like, be kind of quiet or trying to do their thing. And that's great. Like, do your thing. But, like,
right.
as we've sort of mentioned, eventually, or as times change, you had to learn more and more how to, like, be out in front, go and talk to people, kiss babies, shake hands, you know what I mean? And it's like that in and of itself was a learning experience. Like, we used to, this is another, like, old school sort of tactic, but, like, we used to go on tour and Hot Topic used to let bands come through and perform in their stores. So, like, we would tick out all the Hot Topics we could find along our tour route, go to the mall, like, the day of the show, and spend an hour there, like, on an acoustic guitar performing, like, outside or inside the Hot Topic, and just try to, like, glad hand people. And, like, again, it's almost like going in cold when you see somebody you like and you want to, like, ask them for their number.
Right.
It's like that kind of old school stuff. And you're just, like, performing and try to kick up some merch, try to get people to come in the show. I mean, this is all old school stuff.
Right.
And it's just weird how much that has changed. Like you said, now it's just, like, this digital world. And I'm genuinely honest when I say I don't think anyone likes doing this stuff. Like, granted, if you're a rock star with a PR team, they're doing it. And that's why they're doing it. Like, the band is writing songs,
and they don't like doing it. They like the getting paid part to do it.
Sure, right? You know what I mean? Like, and to Cave's point, like, some of it is fun. Some of it's like, hey, man, check out this thing we're doing.
Yeah.
You guys are going to love this. You
know what I mean? Everyone likes to nerd together. That stuff is
fun, right? And, like, show pics are fun, or show videos, like, also cool and fun. It's the what did you find in your belly button stuff that's just like, leave me alone. You know what I mean? Like, can we just get on with it? So yeah, it's been a while, but you know, they've been great. We're doing our best version of that, you know, as we move along. And yeah, I guess that's a long-winded way of answering your question. But
feel any particular way about how the things have changed, or do you just see it as gift and a curse? And adaptability is really
I don't like it. We've given over entirely too much power to, like, algorithm says feed me, must feed me, or else die in irrelevance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is, I don't think that's conducive to art. Content is not art. That's nonsense. Not to put too fine a point on it, but the short answer is no, I don't.
Yeah, well, that was...
I mean, and I'll make another point. Like, we're at the point now, here today, like, you send out a booking... Again, we're just like an independent band. Like, we're not rock stars or anything like that. We don't have a booking agent, whatever.
Yeah.
You put out a booking request, whatever, they're going to look up your socials. Period, end. I'm not saying they're all doing that, but that's like a reality.
Yeah.
Like, how many plays did your latest single get? How many followers do you have on Instagram? That's what they're looking at. And it's like, you know, that's tough. You have to prove you have fans somehow, though. You know what I mean? I guess especially when you're going out of town.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you said, we've toured all over the country, and it's like, back then it was different. They weren't doing that. It was like, we could convince somebody, like, to give us a chance. Like,
I was going to say,
listen to our record,
man.
Listen to our song. I'll put together a bill. We'll get other local bands to come out and help support and fill the room, and we'll do our thing. Ultimately, obviously, the idea is, like, get signed or get some kind of deal or get some kind of support, because, you know, exposure is the name of the game. Like, at whatever level, until you are out playing theaters and then so on, you just need exposure. You need to be in front of people and get people to, like, tell other people that they like you.
And now we're losing all those middle ground venues, which is making that old road that used to be travelable.
I mean, right here. Like, I mean, look, people, there are, like, we can name people in Tampa who did not have to, that went out of their way to help us. You know what I mean? Booking agents, venue owners, Tom at Crowbar, Jacket Aestheticize, everybody at Broken Mold. You know what I mean? Like, these guys put their necks out. Reacts used to be a magazine around here. Yeah. Those guys helped us back in the day. Like, those relationships matter. And they are still doing it to bands beyond us, younger, up-and-coming bands behind us now, today. They're still trying to do it, despite the fact that venues are closing left and right. You know what I mean? And it's either, you know, it's some TikTok star that's going to feed your venue, that's going to sell tickets, that's going to, you know, get the bar till, you know, spinning. And it's harder and harder to just have what you would consider like mid-level or local bands, or mid-level venues of what we consider up-and-coming bands who have something to say, something to hear that we think people will like, you know.
But it's like a great filter.
Or maybe it's right, yeah.
That was one of the things I wanted to ask about. Pardon me. I recently watched an interview where this person was putting forth the notion that it's important for everyone to create, even if you don't think you're good at it. Now more than ever, if you have any kind of art in you, start making it. What do you think are some of the challenges that you guys have clearly made the decision to make your art? If it's a 20-minute song, or just simply to, or a 20-song record, or to simply just have a violin on stage and not guitars and amps and things.
Well, I mean, I'll return to the point that we've had so much support, certainly locally, and they have. I don't even just that they gave us a chance. I mean, they gave us advice, like Joe DeCunto at Broken Mold specifically. Like, we've been working with him for a long time. And he has not just been like, okay, we'll get you on this show, but has also been like, try this, try that. You know what I mean? The guys at 97X, they helped us. Again, they put us on Next Big Thing. They put us on shows with other bands. Like, we've opened for some big bands. We opened for Panic at the Disco once. Like, it was like so cool. And now we've changed sounds again. So we were already doing something weird, right? Like, what is this electronic rock band? Two pieces? What? Where's your bass player? Why don't you have a bass player? And now we've changed it again, but
he replaced himself. I heard, right?
But honestly, like, it's, I feel like it's been received with open arms. And I guess Madison probably should answer this question more directly, because you're the one who's on stage. Like, if you feel it and you feel like you're getting a response, I guess speak on it.
In terms of what exactly?
Like, are we being? Do you feel like we are? Our weird little band gets accepted. Do we get a response on stage?
Yeah.
Like, are we killing it on stage? Like,
I think so.
Or do they like it?
I think we've played a handful of shows where the entire crowd absolutely loved us. A handful. We've had some really good crowds, I think.
Do you enjoy challenging what people think they're going to hear?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's intentional. Like, we're never like, okay, man, how can we do something weird and different? You know what I mean?
It didn't start like that. It's a fun added perk. It's a fun added.
Yeah, even if it's not intentional.
Yeah.
It didn't start this way. Like, even when Madison's first show was at New World Brewery, again, like, they gave us a chance. Here's our lineup. And as he mentioned, our friend Mark also played on that on bass, Mark Allen. It was this weird setup, and they're like, well, let's hear the song. Sounds good. Come on in whenever. And we just set it up, and that was a night that, like, I think unequivocally, like, we killed it. We killed the room. Again, the support bands helped. All the support bands were good. But you know, you're putting out a quality product. That's all that matters. That's all they care about, man. Like, they just want to hear and feel something. And if they're getting some kind of catharsis, if they're getting some kind of message, if they're getting this exhilarated feeling, that's all that matters, and that's what they want. And so, you know, the rest of the stuff just sort of is supposed to come along with it. It doesn't always, because there's this whole other business side, but they come back if you gave them that feeling.
What do you think is the biggest hurdle for that, though, in terms of having the opportunity to have the person susceptible to the feeling? You don't have, like you said, this isn't like some commercial backed thing where they know what they're going to get, what they're going to expect, and, you know, it's all play color by number type routine. You know what I mean? So what becomes the way that you can open the door to that opportunity even happening for your listener?
You have to break it down. You have to find the way. That's it. No, nobody's give. I've rattled off a list of people who have helped us.
Yeah.
But you have to force the issue. You have to ask. You don't get these gigs without asking. You have to put something out there. You have to, like, say, I have this thing, I'd love you to listen to it. You have to say, I found your venue, we'd love to play there.
I guess then that really, I guess, is my operative question. At this point, and, like, circling back to the person talking about their importance of art, what makes you love for someone else to listen to it?
Because, like he said, we love listening to it. Like, I put on our record. When we first started, it was like, I want to play what I wish... I want to make the record that I wish existed. And so when we were making these first songs. It was like, yes, this is like, finally, this is the thing that I want to hear this. Like, yeah. And everybody can talk about their influences, and it's always a grab bag, right? And so the output, I mean, hopefully, isn't just like a ripoff of like one other thing or one other sound. Like I said, this sound wasn't, I mean, it was intentional in the respect that Cave wanted to do this like electronic thing. But it wasn't like, well, how do we make something weird? You know what I mean? It was just like, but it always going in with the intention, like, what would I want to hear? Like, what would I want this song to do? And I, you know, Madison's been writing on her own and for a while now, so I guess she can speak to how she approaches it. But that's what I want to play what I want to hear.
Do you always look at that as an open-ended thing? What I want to hear today could be anything?
I think so, yeah. I mean, that's a very fluid idea. And obviously all of us have a ton of influences and a ton of music we like listening to. So yeah, I feel like that's a massive, massive ocean of ideas.
Do you guys relish in that? That the ocean, the pantheon of ideas amongst the three of you is that varied?
I don't know. Do you guys?
I mean,
I think it's fun.
Yeah, because you get, well, so we've been doing this for so long, we have a shorthand. It's like, oh, like, think about Radar Love. Like, I'll never, ever, ever forget that. We were making the song Domino, and he was like, think Radar Love. And it was like, oh, okay, I know what you're talking about. You know, but whether, I mean, like, I like Genesis, he likes Supertramp. Oh, now I like Supertramp. You know what I mean? It's like, so we have a shorthand. It's like, oh, let's try this, or let's try something like this. Let's try this Pink Floyd-y thing. Let's try this Zeppelin-y thing. This one, try the Cethel Cain thing. No, I don't know what I'm saying. I'm sorry, but like, you know what I mean? Like, so you it
becomes this massive Venn diagram,
right? But you have this grab bag, and like Cave was mentioning earlier, because we do this electronic thing, we can literally do anything we want. You want a choir? We'll put on a choir. You want a horn section? Then let's put on a horn section. But even beyond that, there are going to be sounds literally that nobody's ever heard before, because it's electronic. It's an invention that he's making with plugins. You know what I mean? It's like, so. Even if Madison is like, I like the way my violin sits here, can we move this? Can we open the arrangement here? Can we add something behind it so that it is following? Or, you know what I mean? Like, you can literally do anything, but anybody can do that, and they should do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Push the envelope, like, try it out.
You're right. I couldn't agree more. Do you ever have times when you have things like that, when you want to try whatever lands in the cacophony and you worry that this might not sound like Gray Market, or is it that whatever is in the cacophony by default sounds like Gray Market?
Yeah, the latter. Try everything. Like, we will decide if it sounds good or not, but we're not going to decide, like, this is not appropriate to put out.
No, I mean, like, suits your identity.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, there isn't, the identity is baked
forever
in.
Amalgamous.
Yeah, it's baked in. I mean, if you, I would argue that if you listen to our records, you would you can, obviously we are very close to it. So we would say like, oh, they all sound very different. Like the you know, this has sparse arrangements, this has different themes, this has different, like, you know, all that stuff.
Of course.
But I would argue that all our records sound like Gray Market records, but you're the newest to it. So maybe you can answer that question.
Yeah, I think that in terms of like Gray Market identity, Gray Market sound,
I think
there's an incredibly wide range of different colors that you guys have been playing with for a really, really long time. I mean, when I started working on this album with them, I went back and listened to a handful of like the older tracks and stuff, and I think they are wildly different in colors.
Right.
So I don't think we have to worry a great deal about, oh, is this Gray Market? Because it's going to sound like Gray Market. It's going to do it. I think partially because the arrangements are so dense, it's hard for it to not pick up on that sound because there's so much happening.
And who wants to make the same record over and over again anyway? Like,
right.
your listener is going to get bored with it. I mean, you know, the best bands, you know, usually have like a 10-year prime, even if they go on for 40 years. But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
it's
so you have to, I mean, I would not tell any artist how to make their art, but like, try something different. Try something new. You know what I mean? Who knows? But you don't want to get stale. You don't want to get bored.
Yeah, bored is possibly the worst.
Right. Yeah.
I will say I have yet to be afraid to bring in a potential violin part because I'm like, oh, what if it's not Gray Market? That thought has never crossed my mind because I feel like these guys are so open-minded about different colors. I've never been like, oh, I don't know about this one. I don't know if I should show them this idea.
That
hasn't happened yet.
That's cool. That's a very good palette for a group creation for sure. Is that something that you felt right away or something that you grew into?
Definitely right away, because I think after our very first show, you guys were like, do you want to write something for Phlebas? Like, immediately you guys were like, oh, write a violin part. And it was fun. It was really fun. Everything I brought in, they were incredibly receptive to. And obviously we added stuff, tweaked stuff, but I never felt like there was a layer of judgment there.
That's the big thing. Did you guys always have that, where when your creative freedom was rooted in the fact that there was no judgment?
I mean, there's judgment. Like, he'll be like, no, that doesn't work. But that, yeah. But I just mean in terms of that, not like, why would you do that?
Yeah, I feel
like we have a very detached understanding of, like, this is the thing I made versus, oh my God, if you critique that, it's a critique of me directly.
Right, the taking it personal part.
There's a big gap between those ideas, I think, in everything that we bring in, which makes it so much easier and so much more productive, because it's really hard to work with people if, like, the thing they made is literally them, and if there's anything about it that you think should potentially be changed, it's...
Yeah, we have, like, we have exacting standards on what we do. Like, we take it, like, we don't take ourselves seriously, but we take what we do seriously. You know what I mean? And so, like, what we will try everything, we'll throw everything at the wall. Like, if anybody has an idea, if it's inspired, you know, whatever it is, we'll see how it goes. And maybe it'll work and maybe it won't, but, you know, you don't want to, like, keep it in your pocket, because, like, well, this is your chance to try it out, and then the chance is gonna be, the song's done, it's done. When it's recorded and released, it's over. So this is your chance to do it. Bring it out, bring out your creativity, because that's really half the fun. We're all doing this because we want to make something that didn't exist before. You know, it's like, get after it.
That is our magic trick, make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
So do you all have music theory backgrounds or music training, formal training?
Do you? I don't know.
Nope. Poor drummer. Yeah.
I have a little bit of a background in classical music, all that very, very fun stuff. I took many a semester of music theory in college. So a little bit here and there.
And Cave knows theory.
Cave knows so much theory, a despicable amount of theory.
but he's a songwriter. You know what I mean?
So it makes amount of theory. Yeah.
And he does the arrangements, et cetera, et cetera. Like, what the old formula was, just like, Cave would come in with this thing, right? And he would show it to me and he'd be like, okay. Now I'm going to do, sometimes we would already have drums even, you know what I mean? It'd be like, okay, let's try that if it was possible, or I'll do a version that's possible, you know what I mean? And we'll try to find a way around it. But it was really just like, collaborate on the bones. Again, it could be further along than that, whatever. And just try to put, again, like, what I want to hear on it. And sometimes he's more specific about what he feels like it needs. And sometimes he's less specific about that. But, like, either way, it's just about, like, put your name on it and see if it works.
Yeah. I will say there have been a handful of tracks that I've, like, went to sit down and start writing for that have scared the fucking hell out of me just because of what's going on theory-wise. And I'll, like, text Cave and be like, what key is this in? And I get back words I've never seen.
Oh, no, it's Boolean. You didn't, like...
Oh, the Gregorian mode of the third scale degree. Lydian mode. Like, it goes so far over my head sometimes.
I love that.
Yeah, he knows theory.
I love that. And the reason why I ask that is because it seems like you all have a really good communication amongst you, both spoken and unspoken. So I'm wondering how that came to be, if you know what I mean? Because the reason why I asked about theory was because it seemed like the answer was going to be, yes, we all have theory and we can just speak all in Cave terms and we speak in, you know, Latin.
I have, like,
and we're
30%
good
of Cave terms that I understand if we're talking about music theory.
Yeah. Not like, I have tastes and I'll be like, I don't like that. I'm like, make this do that. You know what I mean? And that's
just,
like,
bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, the other guy, Christian, used to say, like, I talk in boom. Like, I'd be like, yeah, we're just going to make it go, like, boom, bap, bap, boom, bap, like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, something stupid.
Yeah.
But we, like I said, we had a shorthand, and that worked easily because, you know, again, we fell into it, and it's easy to talk about, like, as I said, we wanted to do this, make it move here, you know, whatever. But as Cave mentioned, she's good in the locker room. You know, so it's been easy to talk about.
You're right.
I mean, we'll spend 15 minutes talking about, like, out of pocket, unrelated, that I have to just, like, herd cats in there. But when we do start talking about music, it's very on the level.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's one of the things I like to ask about, because I feel like so many creative groups, regardless if they're making music or making a film or whatever the case may be, that when they learn to communicate, or the secret to communicating or understanding one another, even if you're not communicating in the same terms, developing that understanding is, like, so crucial to the final product being something that everyone can be happy with.
Yeah, it ends up being way more democratic than you think. But, you know, we also, at the same time, like, we trust that he, you know, part of the reason why, I mean, it should be exacting no matter what. But as an example, like, when we started playing with the electronics, we had to learn how to play to a click, which again, every musician should be learning how to play with a click anyway. But we were forced like right now, because you can't do this like sort of loose or laid back pocket rock and roll thing. Like, it doesn't work that way. Now you're on very, very strict time. Even if it's like in a swing time or whatever it is, like you can't deviate. You have to learn. And that also means that every single note that we're doing, you know, acoustically has to be dead on, because again, these electronics are dead on. They are written and they are done. It is perfect, period. So you can't mess around. You know what I mean? So we were forced to learn early and to have that discipline. And it made us, I think it certainly made me a better player.
Do you guys look at those moments where you're forced to learn, forced to deal with whatever it is, as like the exciting challenge?
Yeah, I'll bitch and moan for like 15 minutes about like when we were writing Please Don't Turn the Lights Out or something. It was like this insane drum groove that he had on the demo.
You know, sorry, what I mean? Have you seen my part in that?
Relax.
Hello.
There's a 17/8 part or
right,
something.
Right. It's just like, but
it's funny you say that, because right. That's like a centimeter away from something that would be evil
right.
to me.
Right.
So yeah, you bitch and moan for 15 minutes, and then you bitch and moan for 20 while you're trying to cut whatever the version is that you're going to do, and then when it's done, you're just like, nailed that. Look.
Yeah.
And then I can go on stage and just like think about, and I don't even have to think about it. You know what I mean? And it just flies out. Madison learned how to play in 5/4. Did you know that?
I knew how to do that prior,
I'm messing with
dude.
You. Okay. She complained about it, though.
I definitely think that it's fun. I also bitch and moan about it. Mm-hmm. I love to complain. I love to be like, what the fuck is the score? What key is it? Why is it 5/4? I love to complain, but fundamentally it is really, really, really fun, because it's like a unique way of thinking about my instrument that I previously haven't had a lot of space to do that.
Right.
You don't do that in orchestra. No one's handing you this insane score in a key that you don't even understand. And okay, do something with it.
Yeah, I suppose that had to be a hard left, because all the traditional things aren't mandatory anymore.
I thought it was a blast, personally.
I mean, that's another thing. I mean, again, Cave knows theory, and he took classes in school for that, but he had to really sharpen up and learn how to write violin scores. Like, again, this is another thing where it's just like, obviously we're eternally grateful for that, because he forced himself to learn it, but it was just like, well, if we're going to do this now, there's a new thing to learn. And so like, we're just, by virtue of the fact that we're making this kind of music and this kind of band with this kind of lineup, it has forced us to learn all these different things. And at the end of the day, as I said, while we're not purposely trying to do it, I know that we put on our record, we don't sound like anybody.
Nice.
But it still sounds like something like I want to blast this, man, like crank this, let's go. You know what I mean? And
yes.
I want to do the air guitar and smash my globe in the ceiling. So people seem to like it. And so, you know, we're just trying to get more people to like it, I guess.
And keep climbing Nerd Mountain to the summit that doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you guys, I think, have fared well through all the loaded questions. So I'm going to ask you the easy question that I like to ask a lot of bands. And I always preface it this way. I'm not asking because I want to find out who your favorite bands are. And we haven't really talked too much about your sound other than its denseness and the uniqueness. So everybody's going to just have to go out there. You're going to have to hear the answer to these questions, and then you're going to have to go out there and get your ears on it. No description necessary. When you put out the space opera, and you're going to have to answer this as well, if you could pick one band to play with you, you can each pick a band and a venue. I don't care if it's the Beatles and the Moon. That's become my new tagline. Because I don't necessarily want to be able to illustrate who your favorite bands are, who you love the most, but who you see as the most complimentary thing as another gateway into your world. Who you would put on there to be complimentary.
Like on the bill.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you're going on stage, you're going to play this record front to back. Who's the supporting actor? Or maybe they're the headliner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, however
no,
you want.
I'm the headliner, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, it's your fantasy. Yeah,
it's right, exactly. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to be Robin in my own
no,
fantasy. You know
no,
what I mean? I'm
going to
be
no.
Batman in my
yeah,
fantasy.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to be actually like a Jolly Green Giant Batman.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right. You want to go first? You go first.
I have to go first?
Yeah, man. You've got a clear vision. You have the newest vision. I like it.
Okay. I don't know. That feels like a very impossible question, because in the least egotistical way possible, I don't think Grey Market sounds like anything else, and it's hard for me to envision entities or people that I would want to be a part of it beyond these guys, like, not to be like protective over the idea, but I am a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's the thought exercise of the question, so I appreciate that.
I guess so. If I absolutely, absolutely had to pick something specifically, I think it was in 2006, Panic at the Disco did a really weird mime-themed tour for A Fever You Can't Sweat Out, and they had, like, a live cellist. and a bunch of mimes, and it was incredibly weird. If I had to pick something, it'd be that.
There you go. Panic at the Disco with mimes.
But specifically, like, live in Denver 2006. It can't be anything after that.
So you would want to be, like, we'll do Red Rocks?
I guess so, yeah. But it has to be 2006, Panic at the Disco. It cannot be whatever's going on now.
Okay. I like that answer. That's prerequisite time machine.
Right.
Like that.
Nice. It would have to be something roggy and, like, pseudo-proggy. So maybe, like, 2002 era Muse.
Ooh.
Or like 74 era Genesis, like Landmines Down on Broadway era Genesis. It would have to be like something one
like
of those.
Like some
two,
Peter Gabriel with the
exactly.
shaved head.
That's right,
situation.
Dude. Yes, but this is the Landmines Down on Broadway era, so like with the leather jacket and the
okay.
Puerto Rican face. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I think either one of those would probably work.
My favorite Peter Gabriel is shaved head and cloak.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Watcher of the Skies just doing the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, love that.
You want to holler off?
Oh, yeah. So, like, I think it would probably be around, like, the 2000s. There was this band called the Cooper Temple Claws.
And that's a really
Cooper Temple
good
what?
Answer.
Yeah,
the Cooper Temple Claws.
Yeah, they,
that's a really good answer.
They were around for a few years. And
we'll have to check that out.
They only did three records.
Yeah, right when like, bands like Muse was hitting, and this was, like, you know, when Outkast was putting out, like...
Speaker Box.
So Clean.
Oh,
you know, like,
yeah.
Like, that, it was back in that era, but that band was, like... They were like a six piece band, and they were playing like.
That's the closest thing to anything that we would probably be doing. But they were like, they were a British band. They only did three records, sort of like a white hot thing. And they were pretty big. They came around doing some festivals in America that we were fortunate enough to see them like one time.
That's cool.
Sorry, go ahead.
I definitely check that out.
I guess it's kind of like telling that we're like, oh yeah, we'd love to play with all these bands from 20 years ago. But, to be honest, it's like. It's not that there's not anything like good now. It's just that there's so much now. There's so many bands. There's so much out there that it's like it's overwhelming. So like I've just been living in the bubble of like trying to work on our stuff because I'm just like there's too much going on. I'm being abnormally loud because I don't have a microphone.
No,
I don't
you're good.
Normally speak like this, but like it's just I can't keep up, man. Like. There are tons of bands I love, but most of them kind of teetered off in like the 2010. You know, by 2010, I feel like a lot of them had fallen away, and now it's just like,
Well, I was going to say that leads into conversation two, which we can shelve for a minute when art becomes overly commoditized.
Sure.
I think that's where me personally, my horse in the race, which I don't talk about too much. I think that coincides with the timeline where art becomes really commoditized, and anybody who was trying to or making enough of a wave existing outside the box got tamped down by the box. But that's a whole nother story.
I mean, if anybody wants to commoditize us, they can. Like, please, just go to the website, buy our records, buy our shirts.
Stream Contact on Spotify.
Yeah, please, like, get after it. Yeah.
Well, I recently found out that when you're doing well in YouTube, they'll put you in the explore phase. And
if you
do well in the explore phase, you get to go to the exploit phase.
I love that. Yeah.
So I'm hoping we get exploited.
The music video for Contact is, like, done and ready, actually. So that'll be up on YouTube soon. So that's...
Awesome.
Perfect example. Let's get exploited.
Yeah.
Ready?
I was going to say,
exploited.
We'll make sure we got the link in there and get the exploitation on tap.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Well, I can't thank you guys for coming down enough.
Thank you. We're grateful.
Madison, Mike, Cave, not the other way around.
That's
no
perfect.
Changing. That's the right way.
Right. No relation.
I cannot wait. No relation. That's the title of the next record.
Hey.
We'll do a side. We'll do a like a pseudonym project.
Okay.
That's going to be the folk metal one, right?
Right, yeah.
There you go.
Doomgrass. Or
absolutely.
Yeah, Doomgrass. Doomgrass, no relation. See, we got to keep this quiet. This is all, we're already
right.
giving away.
Too much. Yeah,
too
somebody's going to scoop it up.
We should just post big things coming and not elaborate.
Yeah.
Perfect. So I thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your time. I can't wait to have you back, and I cannot wait to catch you guys live.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thank
Pleasure.
You.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah.